This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Hello, friends. We're back. Welcome in to the first episode in season 5 in 2024 of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and, as always, it's hosted by my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle, and myself, Kyle Sconawill. 2024, season 5. We've made it 5 full years on this podcast.
Man, that is crazy to think about.
I always get annoyed at this time of year when everybody seemingly posts the, oh, good riddance, 2023. Oh, so-and-so, a celebrity I've never met that's 87 passed away. This was the worst year ever. We're moving. Oh, good riddance 2023. And I'm always kind of like, okay, was it really that bad for you? Like the year was that tough? However, this is like the first time in a while where I would say good riddance 2023 for me. 2023 was not my favorite year.
Yeah.
Just a lot of stuff going on. I won't mention it all, but just a lot of stuff personally, work-wise. And so the other side of that, though, Rob, is I am so ready to make 2024 just the best year of our life, of my life, of each one of our listeners' lives. This is the year that our listeners seize this year. It is the year of Friends from Work, not only us, but also our listeners. So let's make, like, I woke up yesterday just feeling like 2024 is going to kick some serious butt, and I'm going to help make it that happen.
And so, you know what? I feel like,
welcome.
It's important for us to have that mentality because election years here regardless, because it becomes such a thing, but particularly for our American listeners, they're just terrible. They're horrible. And so we need to reclaim that and less politics and more Marvel. So
make Marvel election year great again. Let's go.
Yeah. Man, it is crazy that the last election year was 2020, which was like...
That year sucked too.
You know, quite a year of its own. But talking about just having been doing this for 5 years, it's wild that like 4 years ago, we hadn't even gotten any new Marvel content yet. Like we were still in the phase of just going back through older stuff. We didn't get anything new until like a year and a half into the show.
So at some point I do want to rehash all of that. I think it'd be so fun. One of our listeners on Discord actually asked us that question. They were like, so how did this podcast even really get to where it is now? And I said, you know, I haven't figured out a way to really fully talk about it without sounding like we're douchey.
Right.
But sometime I want to find a way to do that because it is a wild journey to reflect on. Especially what you just said. Yeah, we started just rewatching. Then we had no content forever because it got pushed back.
Yeah.
We had planned for it to have content and then they didn't. And then the WandaVision era is kind of like we have a pre-WandaVision podcast. Mm-hmm. Sorry, postcast. We have a pre-WandaVision podcast and a post-WandaVision podcast. Love to tell that story some more time.
Yeah.
But we're here. And it's going to be a great year. It's going to be a great year. I think the Marvel slowdown is going to eventually be one of the best decisions they've made in this era. Mm-hmm. yes, it might be harder for us to have new content to talk about, but man, we have so much old stuff we can go back through this year. And we have Echo. I mean, this month already is slammed because we're splitting up Echo and What If. Mm-hmm. But I think Deadpool is going to be huge.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm also really looking forward to some screensaver stuff this year. Like, I listened to Ben Stiller on a podcast the other day, and now I'm like, oh my gosh, Severance. We need to go back through Severance and then prepare for season two.
Is season two this year?
There's a lot of stuff. I don't know. I should have looked it up before I said that, but I didn't.
No, I'm with you though. There's so much screensaver stuff that we just, again, I mean, the point of the big kind of rollout was we wanted to cover a lot of the summer blockbuster stuff. And in fairness, there was kind of a drought for a while at the theaters after that. But since then, there have been plenty of things that, like, you and I have still wanted to cover Killers of the Flower Moon, which I think is going to remain relevant until the Oscars. And there are a couple other films. Like, did you see The Killer with Fassbender?
I did. No, on Netflix, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't. After Echo, we're going to do the Friendlies here, which is our own Marvel Friends from Work Awards. But then I think, when it comes award season, it could be fun to watch some of those films that are up for awards that I haven't seen yet for Screensaver.
And the Screensaver Killer Plus side, those get exciting because I not only want to cover Killers of the Flower Moon, we also did a ways back a poll through our newsletter asking people what movie we should cover for Screensaver Plus in relation to Killers of the Flower Moon, and people voted Shutter Island for the Scorsese movie.
Oh gosh, I would love to talk about that. I just talked about that on Friends from Work Plus.
Very fun. Please. Yeah. And then same with The Killer. I'm a huge fan of David Fincher as a filmmaker. Yep. That movie was really fun because it was him reuniting with the screenwriter from Fight Club for the first time.
Is it fun, though?
I think.
Is it fun?
I mean, it's fun to see them together again. It's not nearly as dark as I think I would have expected, recognizing that it is a David Fincher film. So it's already going to be kind of darker than most other movies. But that's a movie I'm excited to talk about because I think it's doing some really interesting things. I haven't seen Napoleon. Have you seen Napoleon?
Nope, I haven't. I'm going to be honest. The bad reviews have kind of swayed me. I got an invite for a screener for that.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't go because it was right before Christmas. But then my brother-in-law was like, hey, you, me, and my dad, we're all going to see Napoleon. I want to see it. And then I read some reviews. I think it had like 40-something percent. And some of the reviews were like, it's just not great. And so then I...
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, right. We talk about that all the time. Maybe it's great still. I don't know. But
well, that's an interesting one because I read the same reviews. But it's kind of in that category of... Like, I've gotten a lot of... like anecdotally positive feedback where like friends of mine that have gone to see it have like pointed out some of the kind of silly things that I think critics flagged, but they also were like, it was a ton of fun though. And I've heard the battle sequences are really great, which is not surprising because Ridley Scott kind of mastered that decades ago at this point. But
I kind of just have tiers of films, and the top tier is I need to rush to the theater's opening weekend, and this one did not fall in that. This is one of those movies that I'm like, if I catch it in 8 months on a streaming site, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Personally. But
no, that's well, and
but
and
I'll still watch it.
There are a couple movies like that coming out soon, and I'm not going to list every movie that's coming out, but Candace and I are finally, we're starting to get caught up post all the craziness of the last few months. I think we're going to go see Poor Things, which is getting a lot of buzz for the Oscars. And The Iron Claw, which is the new A24 wrestling movie with Jeremy Allen White and Zac Efron. That's supposed to be really good and ridiculous. So lots of stuff that we will be covering in between Marvel projects. Also, one more kind of Marvel news thing before I forget.
Okay.
That and kind of ahead of Echo, which you already mentioned, I feel like a lot of people that listen may not have seen this because it was via like a TV spot trailer, but you and I were talking about this yesterday.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
There was a promo that released for Echo, that seems to basically confirm.
No, not seems to. It does.
Yeah,
it does.
That like the events of the formerly Netflix Daredevil series are in fact canon now within
and
the
MCU.
And
what we should say, we shouldn't even say canon. I think we should say happened on the sacred timeline is what I heard Brad Winterbaum talking about. Like, it's canon. What's interesting, though, is they don't go a step further than that with Iron Fist or Defenders or any of that. So,
yeah,
I don't think they ever will, which is the right call.
Right.
I know we have a lot of discussion about this on Discord. I just want to say this is actually probably the right call. I know, like Katrina, one of our listeners, is super anti it and stuff. But if you actually go back and watch all of Daredevil,
mm-hmm.
the third season is one of the best things they've ever done. It would be a tier one project. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about just an average run of the mill show. This was one of the best things they ever created. So it's the right thing to bring in from that whole universe, basically.
And I would say that season one is
also
very good. Top of like tier two.
Yeah,
if we're kind of looking at the MCU laid out.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I think. And
I'm a perfect example of someone who totally was against it, didn't watch any of it.
Right,
and then
yeah.
four friends from Work Plus, you made me, I guess, rewatch it or watch it for the first time. And I freaking loved it.
Yeah,
I
literally plan was for us to watch it much more slowly, and you couldn't stop because you were into it, which says something.
Yeah, it's really good.
I agree.
And by a last shout out there.
Oh, yeah.
Over on Friends from Work Plus now, we have 9 episodes that you can put into a collection on Patreon. So I have our complete Daredevil collection on Friends from Work Plus.
Oh, that is nice.
So if you want to hear us go through it with 9 episodes, we're talking probably 13 hours of content or something. You can get our full Daredevil review. And it's actually been a great synergy thing because the last episode we did was Hawkeye, which mm-hmm. obviously with Echo and Kingpin and just the street level stuff. And then over on Friends from Work Plus, we're tying the bow on Daredevil Netflix just at the same time that Marvel's releasing this promo, confirming that like Daredevil is now going to be kind of canon watching in the MCU. And then this is all kind of leaning on the doorstep of we have Echo screeners in our inbox to then watch a couple episodes of Echo before it drops on Wednesday. Crazy, man.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really excited that they're doing that. If only because I think that the powers that be at Marvel are aware that there are people that have been big MCU fans and are maybe big fans of Maya's character from Hawkeye, because as we said in our Hawkeye episode, she was certainly one of the standouts there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're aware that there are people like that that are not going to go back and watch Daredevil and never did watch Daredevil. And so I still think that those people will be just fine moving forward. I think everyone kind of knows who Kingpin is, and everyone at this point kind of knows who Daredevil is. And I think that that's going to be enough. But I think it would have been a real bummer.
If you're a fan, go watch it.
Yeah. Well,
if you're a fan of this stuff.
I think especially where you've got like the origin for both characters nailed so perfectly. Like of the things that I think those seasons did well, particularly on the Fisk side, but I think with Matt too, like we got a really good, like, this is their story. Season 3 really digs into that on the Matt side and takes something that was like pretty good in season 1 and I think really fleshes it out. And so, yeah, I think that the bummer to me would be if we were just told that that was kind of erased and that it was they were going to do a new origin or whatever. So I feel like there are no losers with that decision. It's just but yes, I think it's a great opportunity, especially if we are going to have less Marvel content less often.
Yeah, good point.
For people to go back and rewatch and ahead of Daredevil Born Again, obviously.
Yeah, well, so I haven't seen Echo yet, although by the time you are listening to this, I will have seen a few episodes of Echo. I do have a slight fear. Well, not a fear. I guess I'll just say that I think my gut tells me that There's probably not going to be as much Kingpin right. as they're leaning into on the promo. I don't think there'll probably be quite as much violence as they're leaning into. And like I said to you on a text, I think it might be more of like Spider-Man in Civil War
right.
kind of thing, where it's like there's just a little bit of Kingpin to whet your appetite. I think there'll be very little Daredevil. Like, if Kingpin's yeah. in it, say 20% of the time, Daredevil, in my opinion, guessing is like 6% of the time. There's going to yeah. be like a couple scenes.
Yeah.
But I think it's just enough, if they do it well, to whet your appetite for Born Again when it comes around.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit nervous that if people are going into this thinking like this is Daredevil season 4 and I'm just so excited for the violence that maybe there's not actually a story behind it that's as good. And I don't think they'll lean into that as much, but I hope I'm really wrong. I hope it's like a super dope Native American story
yeah.
that Kingpin's a part of, you know?
Yeah. Which
we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that seems, I think either way, it's interesting how and I get it. It's the same thing with the Marvels towards the very end, trying to really focus in on
correct
one, you know, sliver of the movie. That's almost more of a post-credit scene than
what they think could work.
Right. Just try to pull people in. So I totally understand that. But I agree that I what we have not seen very much in recent promos is yeah. Maya's story. We've seen a lot more correct. About the characters that I imagine are not. I'm sure Fisk will be. And again, I mean, Echo is a character that was invented in the context of a Daredevil comic. She was initially a Daredevil character. Actually, in the comic, she was initially kind of a love interest, which is just a very different vibe than I think we'll have here. But I think it's a very, it's not shoehorned in. It's a very fitting place to
yeah, sure.
give us a little bit more Daredevil Fisk time.
And yeah. they're not wrong to lean into it.
I mean,
you're trying to sell subscriptions. That's the right way to go about it. Like if I was the marketing team, I'd be like, hey, we should probably like think about all these Daredevil fans we could get on board. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But
I caution those people if that's what they think it's going to be, I think. All right, yeah. Here's the thing. We got a lot going on today. It's been over 3 weeks since I've talked with you, and it's so good to have everyone out there back. It's season 5 officially here on Friends From Work, and every time we have a new season, what comes along with that? But some incredible new artwork from our friend Jacoby Warlick. Now, for those of you just finding this podcast, Jacoby drew us some artwork totally out of the blue for season 1, 4.5 years ago, and it just blew our minds. And I would argue was one of the foundational pieces in our podcast taking off a little bit because the artwork was so captivating. Well, he's been a dear friend for all these years since then, and he's made all of our stuff essentially. Like if you've seen all the season's artwork or the special things or the prints or our merchandise, speaking of merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
You see this hat here?
Look at that. That's the first thing I said whenever we logged on today. Look how nice that is.
Let's call a spade a spade. How dope it is.
I mean,
come on.
Whatever text chain we had going on when we first came up with the Friends From Work in the TVA font and then putting it on a black hoodie like that. Like that is, sometimes you have this like ideal, like the like, platonic ideal for what the end product will be. And then you see it and it's like, well, that's still great. It's definitely, it's not like the perfect thing that was in my brain. That is the perfect thing that was in my brain. That is a great looking beanie.
I'm trying to tilt my head down so you can see it better. Hey, they're available. theffwpodcast.com/shop.
It's nice.
But not only the new merchandise that he designed, which is a ton of new items, but it always comes with a new season's artwork. And so without further ado, for the first time ever to the world, revealing the Friends From Work season 5 artwork and boom.
Wow. This is when we eat the balloons.
Just inside jokes. Love your fireworks again.
Wow.
Just like with Marvel, we always talk about how they can't just run the same formula back. You got to keep trying to figure out new things, bold new swings. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that Jacoby keeps doing it. So, you know, season 1, we had our our Thor and Hulk with all the Easter eggs. And it was like, oh, that kind of looks like them too on the podcast. And that's what it could be like. Ha ha. And then with season two, we're like, well, let's go something totally different. Well, they were launching shows. So he's like, well, let's put all these characters around a TV. And that was different. And then season three is just Doctor Strange focused because that was such a monumentous thing, you know, with like Spider-Man slippers. And, then Jacoby was like, I really want to try something different. So he totally went a different style art direction wise with the dots and the, what is it, like the Andy Warhol type thing?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right? Yeah. Whatever. He does this new like shading that looks totally different. And that was super cool. This year, we're leaning into a Secret Wars comic vibe with this stuff and being a little bold by putting you and my faces on it. So
yeah. But you know, it does feel like the 5-year mark is significant. So
perfect.
I like that it kind of it
and a different logo for Friends from Work too.
Yes, yeah. Which I love. I really love how that turned out. Good. But and yeah, so you know, for a 10-year, who knows what'll happen?
Who knows? By the way, did you catch my Independence Day reference at the beginning of this episode? We're back.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, good. Sorry. Well, we'll be back in 10 years too. Okay, anyways, today is going to be really fun. We're going to be talking about What If first from a zoomed out perspective real quick, and then going to quickly dive through each episode, just briefly a couple of thoughts as we are going through it. It was a super different release schedule for them where both you and I were not talking for the last 3 weeks really because we both were busy with Christmas stuff.
Right.
But they were releasing these episodes one a day from December 22 through 29, I think is what it was. Something like that. I got a chance to watch like, I missed the first two. Then I watched three on a day. Then I watched one, like episode four on the first day. Then I missed a bunch of days and then watched like 5, 6, 7 and then missed a few days and then watched the last two. It was something like that. I know you're catching up later, but
yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. Let's get into What If from a high level here. So on this podcast, we say this a lot, but you and I truly have not talked about any reaction to What If season two at all.
True.
Before this.
Yeah.
I'll say what I thought. I thought not only was it a massive step up from season one, there were a couple of things that actually caught me by surprise and I got a little bit giddy about. Season one was well done, but when it released, if you can go back to that time period, I was very much just kind of lukewarm on the idea of an entirely different animated thing, characters we don't know. Like, I remember just watching going like, this is fine, but this doesn't feel like the MCU. Like, I'm not, what am I watching? Like, this is not something I can compare to Iron Man 1 very easily.
Right.
And so I remember being like, it was good, but okay. This season though, for whatever reason, maybe it's the multiverse stuff, I was way more invested. And even to the point where when we got to like Wanda pulling Peggy through the little portal, I said to my wife, like, like you got to see this. Like what's happening, you know? So this was the first season where I actually had moments like that where I was like, Annika, we need to watch this together. I was ahead of her. I was like, can we watch What If tonight? And I did not do that for, I didn't do that for season one.
Yeah.
So that was my takeaway.
I love that. Well, and you know, like one thing, just talking about the release schedule, and Marvel's clearly experimenting with that in various ways between this and Echo. But I do feel like, even though I didn't get to watch it day by day, I do like it all releasing, you know, within a few weeks or less than 2 weeks rather than week by week, like the first season for a show like this, especially.
Correct.
Like, and I loved it for the holidays. Like we were talking about this on a bonus episode, but whenever Candace and I were on a trip in a hotel and we were watching a bunch of Marvel movies on cable and they were kind of advertising, really heavily advertising What If as this sort of like fun holiday thing to have to just while you're whatever sitting around and bored on the day after Christmas. And it was, I thought it was really great for that. Like this, like here's it's a 9-episode event. Cause I feel like by the time we got towards the end of What If season one, especially with how much other stuff was coming out in 2021.
Yeah.
It just felt like people had kind of, it had lost steam in terms of not the quality, but people's attention span. Like I think people were really do you remember whenever we posted the first like poster that came out from What If on our Instagram and it got like a ton of like interaction where everybody was talking about how stoked they were for it.
And actually, like that first episode of What if I remember right, did really well listenership wise. Like we were polling big numbers for that when it first came, but then it definitely dwindled as it went along. I'm totally with you. The entire release schedule, I think, has got to be viewed as a win in every way. If you go weekly with a show like this, it can't carry the conversation. And you're totally right. The attention just gets lost because that's not what it's meant to be.
Well, and with everything
side stories.
Yeah, with everything being largely self-contained. And again, you know, they do have in both seasons, by the time you get kind of past the halfway mark, certain things connect, but they're still meant to be separate pieces.
Right. But then if you drop them all at once, I think you're missing a little bit of an opportunity to keep people somewhat on the same schedule.
Yes.
I think this is a perfect way to basically like command or demand the attention of Marvel fans for 2 weeks or so, which is about what the show is going to hold if you drop them all at once anyways, kind of thing. And you're right. The holidays, huge win. Like if you put this during football season, just like it's going to get lost, but to have it with a holiday episode in it, by the way, to have like that vibe around Christmas, just like you're saying, that literally I was the poster child of what you're saying, like at my wife's parents' house. So at my in-laws, out of things to do, my daughter's sleeping at 8:30 PM. We're all sitting around the living room and we're like, let's just put on some What If. Like that's what happened for me. And I think that's how the show is best consumed. So I'm with you. It's got to be a huge win.
Yeah. And I agree with you too on the quality front. I just thought it was generally like
better.
It was better. Yeah.
The stories were better. I thought like the actual things we could tell were better imagination of the What If scenarios, I thought.
Yeah. And I feel like there were more episodes here that felt like, the Stephen Strange episode that we loved so much in season one, where it's like there was an emotional core to it. One thing that I've really appreciated about this show that I think was showcased really well in that episode and some others from season one, but really across the board here is you never, because you're living in a different reality that doesn't impact really anything at all and isn't even going to probably show up in live action stuff, it feels like anything can happen. So it's like you have
correct
stakes like in the moment that you would be really hard to sell in an ongoing movie where it's like, well, I'm pretty sure Captain America isn't about to die in the first Captain America movie.
Well, and another advantage they had was I don't think I anticipated them carrying over so many plot lines and actually having like a season two for these characters, the heroes of the multiverse, and like revisiting those characters. So that's another reason I think I was more invested in the first season. But I'm with you. I felt that every episode, I'm like, what are they going to do? They could do a crazy, you know, episode 4 from season 1, Doctor Strange episode, where all of a sudden he just loses and that's the end of it. And I was kind of looking forward to that. You're right. Like there are stakes and you're kind of on the edge of your seat because they could just kill somebody. They could kill the character they introduced in that episode. I will say, I guess as a however for me, I guess I was a little bit disappointed they didn't do more of that. Like as I was watching, I was kind of waiting for that. Like, they're going to just kill Peggy Carter right here. And that's going to be the end of the episode. She lost in this universe. I'm just trying to think of one example, like maybe even the first episode, like what if Nebula just didn't do it and the Nova Corps gets destroyed and that's how it ended. I was kind of looking forward to more of that because of what you're saying. Like there's no reason not to. You don't ever have to carry that character over ever again. And so I think that was a disappointment for me.
No, I agree. I would say there are a couple of things that I would say, not as necessarily critiques, but in terms of the approach, I feel like one, yeah, I think that they can take advantage of that opportunity more than they have so far. Mm-hmm, because yeah, we do get like, you know, it's like, I like seeing those consequences play out in a meaningful way. Like we did with Ultravision. Is that what we said for season one?
Something like that.
But then, you know, and again, there were consequences in terms of things happening in one episode carrying forward. So like the stakes were there. But yeah, like that was such a shocking, great part of season four that, yeah, I guess you're right. Like I felt it in the moment, I guess, like halfway through an episode, I felt like anything could happen, which is why I brought that up. But then, yeah, looking back on it, normally the thing happened that you would think would happen. Like they figure out last minute how to save the day.
Right. And like who was the catastrophic loss?
Yeah. Well, and so that kind of leads me to one of the things that I think this show could do better in season three. And that's tracing, maybe this is kind of, I think both of my comments can maybe fall under the umbrella of this one, which is, I think that the show could be a little bit more like the What If comics than it is. And what I mean by that is, one, the comics often trend very dark because they recognize exactly what we're saying. Like there are things you can never do in the Amazing Spider-Man ongoing comic because it would break the continuity. It would ruin the character for people. Like if you show Spider-Man doing certain like abhorrent things, not that that's what everyone's craving all the time anyway, but like you can do that. And like there's the What If comic that always comes to mind for me is like, what if Uncle Ben didn't die? And they basically explore like Peter still gets the spider powers, but he never learns that lesson. And what does that mean? And it's just like, it plays out Peter kind of just being a jerk, like being Spider-Man, but being like never learning the responsibility lesson and always, and kind of how that all goes all the way to like the end of his, you know, Spider-Man career. And that's like that to me is what I think this show could do more. Mm-hmm.
Like Doctor Strange in the first episode or in the first season.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, the other piece of that for me is I wish that there were more, like in the comics, it always feels like the what if question is very targeted in that way where it's like, okay, well, here's a thing that we all know happened. What would happen to this one character if he didn't just make like that decision? And then we like follow that character along the way. The show does that, but sometimes it feels kind of roundabout. And sometimes it's like this just, if like for instance, the like Hela Wenwu episode, which we'll talk about, like, and this is not really a critique on that episode at all, but just as an example, it starts where the what if is kind of like, what if Odin, instead of banishing her to hell, banishes her to earth? But then like the story that we get is really like, it's an excuse to pair her with the world that we met in Shang-Chi, which winds up being really fun and cool. But it's not like, I don't know if that's really like a question that I was asking, where I'm like, oh, there's this core moment in the MCU story where Odin banished Hela to hell. But what if that hadn't happened? Like I guess sometimes it feels like the show is answering what if questions that no one's ever asked. Whereas sure. Like, I feel like the comics were intentionally answering questions that people would have asked. Like, well, this was this monumental moment, you know, with like the Fantastic Four, where like this is how the mission goes and they get their powers, but what if it didn't go that way? Or like, what if this person was part of the Fantastic Four?
I think that's why we'll go episode by episode here in a second, because each episode is isolated enough that some of those answer questions I was wanting more than others, I think. Like, for example, okay, my last two overarching things, one on the negative front, I didn't love the finale partially because I understand that in a animated side universe that the keeping it grounded with the power sets and stuff is not that important. But I guess I'd argue that it is still important. I wish they would keep it somewhat parallel, even though it's animated, to what we're used to seeing. And by the time we got to the end of that, I understand they were trying to do all these fun Easter eggs and bring all these characters back and that it'd be fun for the viewer. And it is. But like the fight got so ridiculous that I just, for me, again, people are rolling their eyes, but as the power sets guy, I just feel like I'm losing touch with what I'm watching when like Captain Carter can now wield all the Infinity Stones, which I don't know how it's possible. And then that's not enough to beat Doctor Strange. And then like Killmonger has the Infinity Stones, but then Kahori can just instantly pull him out of the suit with her power. And I'm like, what power is that? And does that really just kind of almost mock Killmonger then? I just...
Yeah.
We'll get to that episode by episode here in a second. My final huge plus, I was stunned at how many actors and actresses they got back for this.
Yeah.
A huge improvement over season one, in my opinion. Like, they got Elizabeth Olsen back.
Yeah, Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett. Apparently, she jumped at the opportunity, so that kind of is exciting for me.
Yeah, that's
like
crazy.
In general, I just like that people are willing to do it. Like, and I guess they're getting paid, but Haley Atwell, obviously. They got Dr. Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Stanley Tucci did his lines. I'm trying to think. There were a lot, though, that I was like, let's go. Oh, Michael Douglas back to do his lines.
I know, and I was really hoping that that second episode, we were going to get an American President reunion with him and Annette Bening, but it was not, in fact, Annette Bening. Although it was a really good impression of Annette Bening.
All right, episode by episode, quick breakdown after a quick word from these sponsors. I literally only have two or three thoughts on each episode. That's it. So episode one was the Nebula and the Nova Corps stuff, to which I really appreciate the Blade Runner vibes.
Yes.
Like I do.
Yeah.
I do really like that this show can try all these different, like we said with the stakes, but stylistic swings too, and just make totally different things because what does it matter? They're not tied together. I thought this was an example of a pretty well imagined what if, as far as like the planetary shield, I thought was a cool idea for the Nova Corps, and then how that was kind of fitting with what the isolation would do to those people, which we could all relate to a little bit.
Yeah.
So I really like that. Overall, though, towards the bottom of my favorite episodes. I didn't rank them all, but this was not my favorite one.
See, this would be towards the top for me.
Wow.
But it's funny. I didn't think it would be. Like, whenever I saw the episode titles released, I was like, There's not really a hook for me in the actual story. Like, again, I enjoy the Guardians movies because of how well imagined they are. And I think the humor is good, but it's not a set of characters that I want, that I need to spend more time with in the same way that I would with certain other, like, kind of mainstream Avengers adjacent characters. So, like, there wasn't a lot that would get me super revved up. But I liked the tone so much, and I thought it really complemented the animation style to where, for me, like for that to be the first episode out the gate of season two, it set the bar pretty high. And I actually felt like not a lot, but several of the episodes that kind of followed it really struggled to meet that in terms of kind of the quality for me.
The noir narration stuff was really cool. The Blade Runner visuals and like the Blade Runner vehicles were really cool. And then a highlight for me, a Yon Rogg reveal played by Jude Law. So speaking of another voice that they got back, Jude Law.
Yeah. And I liked the Howard the Duck utilization there. That was
Seth
fun.
Seth Green, I think. Again.
Yeah.
Yep. And I really liked the Korg kind of Avengers 1 puny god Loki smash callback there when he finds those two Nova Corps people and then does the, you know, what am I? What puny god? What'd you call that move? The smashing them ridiculously on the
head. That's. I thought you can call that puny god.
Overall, and across a lot of these episodes, Korg, Taika's Korg was a highlight for me. Some funny lines.
Again,
good job.
I'm really glad that Taika came back. Yeah, my final note on that one is just I thought it would not have worked at all if Karen Gillan had not done as good of a job as she did because it's so rooted in her kind of noir narration, like you said. I thought that she was one of the stronger voice actors across this whole season. And again, maybe it's because she kind of got the chance to play such a particular, like dig into that tone.
See, I think I disagreed with that. That's what's so, we're always on the same page. Well, I think it's because she's trying to really lean into the like robotic noir side of Nebula. But I thought it came across as kind of just too down the middle of the road on my, but that's so funny. Like, we're allowed to disagree. Yeah. We never disagree.
That was not my favorite part of it.
And I didn't think she was the best one. I do love Karen Gillan.
Yeah, there are. Well, and we'll talk about other ones that I think were probably equal. But there were other episodes where I was like, this is not sound. Like, even if it's the same person, it doesn't sound like the same person. And I don't know. We talked about this in season one. I don't know if it's an animation disconnect between like that and when the lines are recorded. But there are certain times in the show where it's like, man, I don't understand why I'm listening to this actor who's doing the voice that I associate with this character. And I'm looking at an animated version of the character and it still doesn't seem like that character.
Doesn't feel real.
It's a weird disconnect. But yeah, anyway, I thought Karen Gillan was excellent.
Okay, kick us off with this one. Episode 2 was when the old Avengers team up. Stop Star-Lord and his father Ego from invading Earth. Thoughts?
So this is another one that whenever I saw the title, I was like,
We're going back to Guardians again. That's funny.
Yeah. But then I realized like, okay, this is kind of a question that I've asked before to your point where I've, you know, like what if Peter had been delivered to Ego?
Sure.
Like that is kind of a foundational one. And that's the kind of question that I would like to see them answer, as opposed to, by the way, like, what if Nebula joined the Nova Corps is another one of those questions that, like, no one was asking. It turned out to be an episode that I loved, but this one does have that going for it. The biggest takeaway
what if Nebula joined the Nova Corps? Can you imagine?
And we've just all sat around.
I called you four times last week being like, hey, have you thought about this? Like, what if Nebula?
Get this.
She joins the Nova Corps. Thoughts?
What if Tony had gone to Harvard instead of MIT?
These are the important, hard-hitting questions we need here in the MCU. I thought this one was down the middle of the road for me. So this would be, if I was ranking them, this would be an average one for me. I really liked seeing the Walkman tie-in with Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. This is another one, I guess, back-to-back episodes that's answering a Guardians-type question with, and then mixing it with a Captain Marvel reference with Yon Rogg. And then one of my favorite parts of the second episode was bringing in Wendy Lawson, because that's a character we actually don't know a ton about. But if she had more liberties, maybe she could have been helping the Avengers team and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of a cool highlight for me too.
I thought the thing that I liked a lot there was they used the opportunity, and I never really thought of what if being able to do this, but the way the MCU started with Iron Man and kind of leaning into a very modern kind of Ultimates type version of the Avengers, it foreclosed the ability to do the kind of classic Silver Age-y feeling stuff where you had like, you know, because like the original Avengers team, you have Ant-Man and the Wasp on there, and it feels like this, like even the versions that we have of characters that we did get on the original Avengers team were just a lot like kind of campier and more old school. Mm-hmm. And so I did think here that was a fun idea of like, let's get a look at like an Avengers team that feels a little bit more classic in a way that we'll never really be able to explore in the MCU without like retconning stuff in a way that would be awful. And so I was just like, yeah, this is nice. Like it, by the end, it had kind of like played out for me, and I'm sure. Not sure how much the same. Like I really cared about the Ego Peter side of it, honestly, which is maybe again just my bias.
You Guardians hater, golly!
I know.
What the heck? Although, again, it is funny that they're taking two of my least favorite movies with Captain Marvel and Guardians 2, and living yeah, in true. That world.
But I did like I love the young T'Chaka, which is the same actor from the. Kind of opening scene from Black Panther.
Bill Foster
plays,
as well.
Oh yeah, and Bill Foster. Yeah, that was fun. I thought Michael Douglas did a good job here.
I like seeing Chris Hemsworth as Thor. And I kind of like seeing classic Thor, like not modern Thor, if you know what I mean, like not jokey, like slick Thor. He is delivering lines, and lines were written as if it was Thor 1 era, and I thought that was kind of fun.
I thought that. Which that will kind of dovetail into my episode 3 thoughts. But if you have any more on episode 2.
Episode 3, what if Happy saved Christmas?
My big thing here, and then I'll give it to you because I started off the last one. I just thought, we were just talking about this the other day. This was fun for me primarily because of how much I... like miss this era. We've talked about that from the very beginning. It's like and phase Justin two Hammer. In general.
Justin Hammer, Sam Rockwell.
Oh man. Yeah. No, I mean, that's it's like the even though some of the movies that came out in this kind of like either side of the first Avengers movie were actually are not reviewed super well. It is just this fun, like
our golden
age. I miss Avengers Tower. Sometimes,
and they're just all friends, and they're not arguing, and they're just a team, and they're just living life.
we got so little of that, and I'm not. Again, I think it was played out and paced right across the Infinity Saga, but I like that this gave us an example to go back and see them in Avengers Tower. It feels so much like that scene in Age of Ultron that we always talk about loving. So that was my big takeaway.
It gets torn down really quickly, you know. So anytime you can add a little more, I'm into it. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great example of it having like them going back to that era, but it having stakes because it's a different reality. Like if we were to get some like flashback to Avengers Tower between the first and second Avengers movies, then like it would be fun, but we would know like nothing's going to happen here that would be significant enough to change the way the rest of the timeline flows. So it felt like I really didn't know where we were heading in this episode too.
Love that we got Sam Rockwell back. Hot take, bold prediction. I think he's a character we need in phase 5 here in real life, in the sacred timeline. I want Justin Hammer to make a return. I think it'd be fun. And I think he would do it. And I think it'd work really well in something like Captain America 4. Overall, agreed. I thought this was just a fun one. Like you said, like living in the era was fun. And because it was Christmas and I was watching it on Christmas, that's a win. It was a fun episode.
Yeah.
Episode 4.
Yeah.
What if
Iron Man, Die Hard thing was fun.
Episode 4, what if Iron Man crashed into the Grandmaster? For me, this is my number one what if episode in What If Season 2. Number one episode, partially because I do think it's a slightly interesting question. I do think it's pairing two of my favorite movies, Thor Ragnarok and Iron Man 1. And just to be totally honest, it's just kind of fun to see Tony Stark again. Yes, it's not RDJ, but like just, I love the idea that no matter what happens to Tony Stark, he kind of becomes Iron Man in any universe. And so even on Sakaar, to get that shot of him like pounding the hammer and rebuilding a suit, it's like, yeah, like no matter where he is, he figures this out and has such a character turn that he's the good guy, right? He's convincing Valkyrie, like, you don't have to do this anymore. I thought this was a highlight for me. And just funny with Jeff Goldblum back.
Yeah.
This was my number one.
Wow. We are so opposed on this.
You hated this one?
And I love it. I didn't hate it, but at this point, my note is like four episodes in, this was my least favorite so far.
Oh my gosh. And we are never this different. What the
heck? I know.
Heck?
I love it. Here's why. One, I could not get past, I did not think that the voice actor for Gamora did a good job of
Gamora, okay,
sounding like Zoe Saldana. Like it just didn't, which is fine. But given that that's kind of what they're going for in the show, that pulled me out a bit. And the character, I don't know, it, like, I could see where it would be Gamora on paper, but just the way that it, the lines were delivered, I just wasn't very interested in that character. I actually
feel
like
Guardians, golly. You hate Guardians. Geez,
apparently. Honestly, I do feel like if that had been a Gamora that felt more familiar to me, that would have made a big difference. The Jeff Goldblum stuff was my favorite part. I really liked what he brought.
And Korg?
I think Korg was great. Yeah, that was good too. Like the thing, and, wow, and this is going to come back for me a few times. I feel like I'm the only one that I've heard say this, but I can't.
Don't you dare.
I can't get into Mick Wingert's Tony Stark voice. It's,
how
it, like, I understand that he's doing an RDJ thing, but it's like it's slightly higher than RDJ's voice, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it's like,
throws you a little bit.
It throws me some because I think, like, we were talking about this recently. The nuances of Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark,
totally,
are kind of everything. Like, that's what makes the performance what it is. It's like, it's not like you can just do an impression of Robert Downey Jr.'s voice and
What would you, like, do then? Just never do a What If episode with Robert or with Iron Man?
No, but I think what I'm saying is it's the delivery doesn't track to me. Like whenever it's like he's delivering each line in like a Tony Stark sounding voice, but not in like the tone isn't correct. Like, and the way that Robert Downey Jr. speaks as Tony in terms of like the,
okay, all right,
like there are these little things where it's like think about in like an Endgame when it's like,
dude,
like
you don't have to argue.
Fought him, like you fought him, Tony, and he's like, who told you that? Like, it's like these little, like,
dude, I don't think this guy's as good as Robert Downey Jr. Relax.
No, obviously.
About it.
And I'm not saying that he has to be, but I guess my point is it doesn't feel like Tony Stark to me.
Okay. Well,
so it's hard for me to connect to like the Tony Stark character. But here's the other thing. I'm going to say the same,
like,
about
one of the only things she said was, wow, that guy's doing a good job with Tony Stark. That was like the only comment she had.
I know.
On,
that's what I'm saying. I think that I'm on the wrong side of history with this, because I'm going to say the same thing about Josh Keaton's Captain America.
I agree with that one. I think part of it is that they're just irreplaceable in our brains. Partially.
I think that's true. I think that's right. But episode five,
move on. What if Captain Carter fought the Hydra Stomper? I thought that, the very end when Wanda pulls Peggy through the portal, that's when I was like, oh gosh, like something's happening. Mm-hmm. And to hear Elizabeth Olsen for 1 second was really cool to me. I was like, okay, now we're cooking with gas. I would say, maybe this is my hot take, in general, they're leaning into the Peggy Carter story from season one And unfortunately, that was probably my least favorite story of season one. That's another example to me of a question for me that I've never asked. I've never thought to myself, well, what if Peggy actually became Captain America? I'm like, it's the same thing. She's just a girl, but it's the same. Everything would be the same, basically. And so then to put Steve in a Iron Man type suit and call it the Hydra Stomper, this is maybe my hot take. Like, that's just not my favorite storyline. Now, I think Lake Bell does a pretty good Natasha. Do you agree with that or not?
I should say, I don't think it has to be the person, but I think it's just a tall order.
That dynamic was pretty fun. I really thought it was cool how they envisioned the Red Room here with actually having that whole Russian village that's like the, I love America, and they're all robots.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. I do think there was a missed opportunity because I thought that was a chance for them to retcon and actually put the Red Room like in a bunker or something below that village. Like, that would have been a fun way to, like, not retcon, but be like, in a different universe, it wasn't a floating palace. But I thought that once you got there, I thought that was all pretty fun. But again, this is my bias. I don't really care about Peggy Carter. I've never fully bought into the Peggy and Steve storyline. So, like, it's not as heartbreaking to me that they're not together. Like, when they're trying to have a kiss and share a kiss here. Again, that's blasphemous to you. It's just never been my preference, that particular storyline. And again, that's not a question I needed answered. And unfortunately, they lean into it here towards the end heavily.
Well, so I agree and disagree with you. I'm kind of like, I'm a big fan of Hayley Atwell. And so I like how much of her we get in this series. I do
Correct for me, by the way. It has nothing to do with her acting.
No, totally.
Of Peggy.
But it is like, one, I'm not there. We'll talk about this more in the finale episode, but I don't necessarily need this series to do as much
a connected,
like, to have the amount of connective tissue that it does.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Like, I'm not, I was never into the Guardians of the Multiverse, like, as a new thing to follow.
So
it's like, I don't really, it's not that I don't want her. Like, I thought it was a fun isolated thing, and then I understood bringing that back for the finale of season one, and because they were bringing all these characters back. But I don't like, it's not that I need.
From a power set standpoint, do you also find it a little bit interesting that you have Thor and you have Wanda and Doctor Strange, and they're like, the one thing we need to save our universe is Captain Carter? Like, even if it was Captain America, those characters would never say that, right? Like, Doctor Strange would never go, oh gosh, we're screwed because of this galactic tear in a multiversal rift. We better get Captain America here, right? Like, that, the whole idea of that seems off to me. And then that Thor is like so mad that she blew it. When I'm like, you're Thor. You save her.
No, I do want to talk about that when we get to episode 8. Yeah, I agree. Like, it's weird that it feels forced in a way where it's like, well, that's just because this was the standout character for season one. Like, that's the only reason.
But it wasn't even there though for me. Like, that, like, Doctor Strange in episode 4 was the standout character.
No, agree. I think
the Peggy Carter stuff was my least favorite part of the first season.
But I think that it sticks because it's the most like it's the only character from season one that is kind of a wholly new imagining. You know, like, there's no, like, the Doctor Strange, there's nothing about that character that's going to be, like, immediately recognizable for people in the same way that, like, Peggy Carter as Captain America would be. Like, it felt like a whole new thing.
I guess, why lean into that character? Of all the characters in the MCU, and you're asking the question, why is that the question we want to lean into? Like, like you said, I'd rather see like a dark version of something else than the same version of Captain America, but just in a different person. Like, give me, like, let's lean into, I guess they kind of do that with Strange, but like,
but
the Spider-Man example would have been perfect as a perfect example.
No, and that's like, so I guess my, like, the negative side here is like, I don't necessarily want to just see, like, I don't want the what ifs to always just be like an alternate universe. And I get that that's what we're doing given the state of the MCU and the saga. And so like, I'm fine with it, but there, like, I do find myself, it's like part of the reason why I enjoyed episode 3 as much as I did, even though it was kind of just like a silly Christmas episode, is it does feel like we were living in a universe that felt like the mainstream MCU. And then you just see the little things that go differently. And I just, I guess I would rather that. Like, I would rather, like, because there are these questions.
Ground us in the Sigurd timeline and then just split off one thing.
Right. Which they do, but, like, especially with the Captain Carter stuff, it starts to build to a point where it's like, well, now this is just, it's totally unrecognizable. And, like, I see what you're doing and why it's fun to have, like, you know, Bucky as, like, Alexander Pierce in this episode. Like, that's a fun idea, but it's not necessarily, like, answering a like, what if this played out differently question, because it's like, I don't know that, like, it's also a thing where, like, okay, so just because Bucky ages normally, he's automatically going to become
a politician. Like, well, hear me out.
Yeah.
What if Bucky became a politician?
Like, I, but on the flip side, if I'm that is one that I mean, that's one I ask often.
I mean, I know you called me about it 2 weeks ago.
I think once I bought into it, I did really like this as, like, to the extent season one was reimagining Captain America, the First Avenger, which I obviously have an affinity for. I did like how much this was a Winter Soldier twist, because that's another era that I just enjoy a lot. And I think it's, I mean, obviously a well-loved movie. And for a show that is so, like, it tends towards the, like, the mystical and the cosmic, like, what if is kind of so out there often, I did find it really refreshing to have an episode that was pretty, like, grounded.
Okay.
And so, like, I liked, while it wasn't necessarily what I would have wanted, once I got in it, I really did, like, I had a lot of fun. And I did, you know, I thought Sebastian Stan did a really good job as kind of like the older version of Bucky.
So I'm really excited to hear what you have to think about episode 6 then. And I can go first. I can be the hot take guy here. A bold episode, totally standalone. I actually legitimately loved it. Like, mm-hmm. episode 6, the Cahorty? What if Cahorty with a T?
Yeah. Yeah. There's the, yeah, like, a, you know, the classic silent T.
Oh, yeah.
Greg helpfully pointed that out for me. And then, because I hadn't caught that in the actual episode. But then later in the finale, which we'll discuss in due time, I noticed the soft T there in the background.
Okay, well, the soft T gets you every time. What if Cahorty reshaped the world? Now, I have one question quickly. Is this a character from the comics? Because I don't recognize it at all.
No. Yeah, this is kind of a first. In that it's the first character that What If has just wholly created with no comics background.
Okay, so for me, going back to our entire conversation we've been having, I'm not sure that I need this show to introduce new characters. I think I'd rather it be, you know, a slight branch off from another mm-hmm. scenario we already know. That being said, once I got into it, I thought this is one of the best episodes. Just like the story was legitimately moving. And I love that they stayed in subtitles the whole time. It was creative. Mm-hmm. It looked cool. I like that it wasn't trying to be something bigger, just this episode. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. What did you think?
No, I totally agree. I feel like I should say, I guess maybe looking back at our kind of high level thoughts, a lot of the critiques that I have in terms of the format and the premises, they're all things where, like, I don't really want to hold those choices against the episodes themselves, because I feel like those are made on, like a higher level in terms of the kind of stories that Marvel's just choosing to tell. And this is an example of that where, yeah, like you said, this doesn't really make sense to me as a quote unquote what if story. Like it feels pretty like tenuous to try to root it in like Asgard's destruction. And but once you are going to tell a story that's just kind of disconnected like that, yeah, I thought that this was just really, really well done. I enjoyed it a ton. I think it's definitely one of the best episodes of this series.
Agreed. Then episode 7 is the one we referenced earlier with Hela. What if Hela found the 10 rings? And this is another one for me that I know you said earlier, it's not a question you need answered, which I think that's probably true, but I really enjoyed it. I had fun again. Like, so cool to have Kate Blanchett jump on board so quickly. Love that. Mm-hmm. Again, these voices, like getting the band back together is really fun. It was kind of funny to see Winwoo crushing on Hela a little bit, but then ultimately the ending with Hela turning into that like angel being, just kind of cool to think about Odin's kids through a different mindset. You know, like if Thor had become the god of thunder, Loki now becoming the god of stories, and then Hela, whatever this was, this all powerful, like benevolent being. And I kind of liked the play on, you know, you and I have talked about how there are times where Odin isn't always altruistic in everything he does.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like seeing this darker side of, I mean, we heard Hela talk about it. So to actually see him have like a temper more, I like that too.
Yeah. Well, and to like it does, it's one of those rare moments in the show that I think it can serve to give greater detail or development to the actual kind of sacred timeline MCU. Just in like the, that is, I guess, more or less what their relationship would have looked like, even though we never saw it. So it is kind of like it actually allows you to have more empathy for the version of Hela that we met, even though obviously she was awful because she's just the worst. But
just the worst. Fire knives. Yes. Yep.
R.I.P. Hogan. And,
which brings us to episode 8. What if the Avengers assembled in 1602? Positives and negatives here. Can we start with positives first for me? I love seeing all the characters. Like seeing all the imagination of all the characters back is so fun. I thought the Banner Hulk reveal was really fun. Him battling it out with Happy, which like Pirate Happy was really funny to me too. The Hulk smasheth thee or whatever it was. Like all that stuff was incredible. I really enjoyed seeing Roger's hood and the band of swashbucklers like this in this re-envisioned version of them where Paul Rudd and Ant-Man are a part of it. That was a highlight.
Was it the Hiddleston line about him being like a maddeningly chipper criminal?
Yes, yes. And that actually brings me to my last major positive, I think, which is that I think the Hemsworth and Hiddleston thing was really good. And I thought Tom really killed it as Loki. And it was, again, interesting to envision Odin's kids through like a different light a little bit for me. Those are some of the things that worked.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm glad that you ended there because the first big thing that worked for me was Hiddleston in that I loved the intro to this episode. Uh-huh. The cold open where it's black and you just hear him doing the Hamlet soliloquy. And it's like, it's so kind of on the nose that like, of course it would be Hiddleston and Loki to do that. And of course they would like play into that within Elizabethan England. Although I guess they don't really, in the comic it's made explicit that they're in Elizabethan England. And
that's what
I think
feels like
Elizabeth is the queen. Whereas here it's kind of weird because Thor is sort of a king, but we don't really know if he's also an Asgardian king and like an Earth King and what's going on there. But we can talk about that in a second. But
Wimpy King in a second here. Yeah.
Yeah, man. But I loved that opening. And even just it's just a reminder, for the last time of 2023, I guess, how lucky we are to have Tom Hiddleston on board in the way that he is these days. Cause I just, I feel like he is aging like a fine wine within the MCU. Quickly, the other things. Yeah. I was excited about this episode cause I liked that Neil Gaiman comic. They adapted that actually pretty faithfully for the most part. There are some other elements that we'll get into that I think the things where they didn't adapt it faithfully are the things that I think are weaker, not because of that, but just I think that's kind of how it shook out. But I thought, yeah, the voice cast here was crazy impressive. This was the biggest assembly, I think, of the main cast members, like with Elizabeth Olsen. But yeah, like, I mean, just, like Mark Ruffalo, all the way down, it's just, was super impressive on that front. Yeah, I think just in general, I really, it felt to me like, again, maybe not necessarily like a what if, like it, cause again, the comic itself was just 1602 and it was clearly like posited as like a different, and you know, again, it winds up being resolved in essentially the same way where it's a universe that's like folding in on itself. And it involves Steve Rogers being a man out of time, but going back by accident. And so like a lot of that, like I said, tracks, but it's just, this is another example of like, yes, in the same way that like zombies was kind of a what if, and that it's like, what if they were all zombies? It's all, like, I'm still kind of like, is this the, like, I don't know that this is necessarily like the question, to your point, people were asking. But if we are going to go there, it felt like a really great way to get all of these characters together, acting like, for the most part, like themselves and getting a lot of fun banter while also exploring a new world. So it was, I had a ton of fun with this episode. I think it was my number one probably of the,
oh wow,
of the season in terms of just my enjoyment level, preference wise. I
We've
think
been
like
way
objectively
off on some of this stuff.
I know. I would probably go, we're not ranking formally right now, but I would probably put the episode 6, I guess, the Cordy episode, as like the number one in terms of execution objectively, but the kind of like fun fanboy in me, this one I think gets the prize.
There's just a massive elephant in the room with this. I just can't understand why Captain Carter is the missing piece to this entire story. Yeah. And that's what I can't get past with this episode and the finale, which we're going to talk about in a second. But like, why would Scarlet Witch with all of her power and Thor with all of his power go to the future and find the one person they need to solve this multiversal catastrophic event, and it's Captain Carter? Like, you don't want to bring in future Captain Marvel or Doctor Strange or future Wanda? Right. Like, you don't want to talk about this with somebody else? You're going to bring in Captain Carter, who's just an enhanced person?
Yeah.
And then, like, the fact that they bring her in and she's the only one that tries to save Hela and fails. But then immediately Thor, who's been sitting on his butt, is like, she didn't do it. Ever since she's been here, it's awful. She's the devil.
They brought her, like, it was already a problem also. Like, it would be more understandable if it was like, ever since we brought her in, like, now look what's going on. But they only brought her in because it was already a crisis. So I'm just like, I don't, but to your point, like, the whole scenario of someone being sucked up into the sky, not really one that would typically be in a Captain America playbook.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't like the fact that she does make it up onto like the roof and is able to like grab Hela.
Yeah.
With is an incredible itself fairly impressive
leap
to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's,
which
it's
leads
so,
me perfectly into the last episode, because I feel the same way there, which is like, we're leaning into the character I wish we weren't leaning into. Not to mention, I don't even know that I need these stories to all be connected, which we've talked about already.
Right.
But we get to the finale and I'm just like, this is a Captain America character and she's literally holding all of the Infinity Stones in an armor. She can now hold them all, wield them all. And even that is not enough power to take out Doctor Strange. So Doctor Strange has to turn into a giant dragon, and the dragon is fighting an Infinity Stone-laden Captain America-type character, and then Kahorty makes another appearance, which, again, if we just left Kahorty as an isolated episode, it's the best episode of the series, but instead we have to bring her back. And I like, I get that seeing all of the villains and Easter eggs are kind of fun, but they're trying to prevent Doctor Strange from sacrificing these bodies into a forge, because if he gets enough bodies into the forge, he can recreate his own universe. Like, I'm watching it, I'm going, what am I watching with these power levels? The Killmonger thing? Like, we're kind of making fun of Killmonger that we can just immediately rip him out of his Infinity Stone armor. I don't know.
When he was like a legitimate threat. This is all being centered
by Captain Carter.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's a little, and again, what's confusing sometimes is, like, I want to take this on its own terms. I'm not always sure what those are. Like, if we're watching, you know, it's like if you watch the X-Men cartoon that we've been watching through on Friends from Work Plus, getting ready for 97, like, there's a bunch of stuff where it's just like, I don't, you know, like, this is ridiculous. This is a Saturday morning cartoon, but you kind of just like, that's the thing. I think what makes it tricky with the MCU is it's intentionally tying into an existing grounded live action universe that has admittedly gotten more and more colorful and mystical and cosmic over the years, but like, it's still supposed to root into that. So whenever you have stuff like this, where it just feels like, If there were any rules, they've kind of gone out the window. It makes it hard to stomach, because it's like, okay, essentially what we're dealing with at the end, it seems like, are three kind of evenly matched characters. One is Doctor Strange, like at the peak, like zenith of any Doctor Strange powers. One is Captain Carter with like all the Infinity Stones, but also like a bunch of other mystical items.
Yeah,
and then Kahorty with the hammer briefly, but then mostly just her powers. And then it's also like all of their powers are basically just displayed via like vague energy blasts, which is something that I'm kind of starting to get a little like cynical about, because I just, for the longest time, the MCU didn't have that going on. Like Scarlet Witch was the only one doing like hand energy stuff for the most part. And then now it's like, okay, like let's not start to move into this place where everyone can just move things around with their minds and like create energy blasts that can stop really powerful sorcerers. Like, let's get back to like,
stop the really powerful sorcerers from feeding other characters into a forge, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's stopping him. Obviously, that's the next step of what has to happen. I really liked it. I think the thing with the first season of What If is, this sounds harsh, but I was apathetic to it. Like, I think I was like, okay, it's fine, but it wasn't one of my things, so I don't care. This, to me, caught my attention so much more that I think I almost mean this as a positive. Like, having critiques means I now care. Like, it's so much better to me that I'm invested now. And so then, when the last few episodes start leaning into the things that I didn't enjoy as much about What If thus far, that's my only bummer. And I felt like they took, it's kind of like Daredevil season one with the hand or the grounded stuff. And it's like season two leans into the hand and I'm like, oh man, and then season three leaned it into the right stuff. This feels like towards the end of this, like I was super stoked around the Happy Saves Christmas and then Tony with the Grandmaster. I enjoyed the first two with Nebula, like being isolated stories. I think that's what I wanted. Questions like that answered, living in the eras that I liked. And so I really enjoyed that. And then as we got further along, like to bring Kahorty back, okay, so now she's like a guardian of the multiverse. The fact that Captain Carter can now have a conversation with the Watcher, and the Watcher references like, we don't do sequels, but here's 10 sequels.
And then
they show the shot of the Loki tree at the end, which was so dope. Cause it was like, oh my gosh, what a shout out. But even then I'm like, where is that going now? So are we trying to tie in even more tangibly to the main MCU? I don't know. I'm not trying to be curmudgeon. I really liked it, especially over season one. This would be number one over season one for sure. But yeah. I'm just trying to reiterate, I'm not sure it was headed the direction I really would want it to at the very end. Hey, did you see the little teaser for season three, by the way?
I didn't.
Oh, well, the little teaser for season three is just like this clip of basically Red Guardian and Winter Soldier on a road trip. And they're kind of like being chased by cops, I think, if I remember right. They're being chased by someone. It's like a car chase scene. And I'm a little bit more like, that's fine. Like, that's what I want to lean into more than the Guardians of the multiverse. Like, an isolated story like that could be really fun.
That.
So I don't know how long they're going to make these. Like, I don't know how long the multiverse era will be open, but I really enjoyed this. I just don't love some of the turns towards the end. That's my summary.
No, I agree with all that. I feel like the more we can get stories, honestly, like I do think that in terms of, again, I mean, you're already dealing with kind of like what ifs on what ifs, but I do like how kind of contained the Peggy Hydra Stomper episode as kind of a reimagining of Winter Soldier was. Like, I feel like the more we can get things like that, the happier I would be, and the less, like, in general, I would be totally fine with never having another Guardians of the Multiverse element to this show, period. Like, I don't even think the show should have protagonists outside of the Watcher. Like, I think
again,
that
if you don't know what's coming, it's more fun. If you're like, oh gosh, Nebula died at the end.
Right.
Episode one done. Oh, wow. Dang, she lost.
And, cool. And it also kind of makes the, like, I think having recurring, like having people carry over sort of cheapens it, not just from a stakes perspective, but it also makes the multiverse feel smaller, if that makes sense. Like, the whole point of this is like the vast and sprawling multiverse.
Infinite, but here's six characters we're going to focus on the whole time. Right?
Well, yeah, it's like out of everyone, just these that you've only seen in this animated series, these are the ones that are capable of solving this multiversal crisis. And like, by the
obviously, way, they've only made 18 episodes. So we understand, like, you can't, like, at maximum, you could only do 18 different episodes at this point. Like,
sure, styles. Sure. But I think that's my,
but yes.
If every episode was a different universe entirely and we never saw repetition, then I think that that would kind of create a larger feeling,
yes,
multiverse. Even if you did follow-ups, like I'm saying with the Winter Soldier, where it's like, okay, we're going back to this one universe, but we're not going to have her now go to another one and mingle. Like, I feel like what we got in 1602, because I don't think we mentioned this, was that is the most like multiverse I would want to get. In that they show what I think appears to be an incursion arising from Steve Rogers from the wrong universe being there.
How much does that actually accurately, I should say, represent what's going to happen in the MCU? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and
it feels like that's kind of what they're shooting for with incursions.
I'm also wondering, you know, and again, this is just goes back to like us trying to figure out what the mechanics are there, but like it doesn't Steve get sent back because he like hits the time stone? And so originally, he's like sent back in time.
But then because he's there, that's causing the incursion, right? Because he's the forerunner out of the universe.
But why is that?
Yeah, the time stone isn't a multiversal thing. It's a time thing.
Wouldn't that still be the same timeline, but just further back? But then I guess by like the Avengers Endgame theory, anytime you're traveling back in time, you're creating a new branch. So maybe.
Yeah, wouldn't it have made more sense if he'd hit the space stone? Now that you say that?
That would make more sense to me.
I mean, like he portals elsewhere.
That's how Red Skull gets spat out on Vormir.
Right. Interesting.
But I don't know. Yeah, I think they were thinking at some point,
Doctor Strange maybe is what they were thinking, portals, but he's not using the time stone to create those. So yeah,
it makes sense that he would go back in time to the 1600s, but it's not like, and I get that they're saying it's all folding in, but I think it's we're right, just if still
he went
at
back
a
to the 1600s,
where,
Ant-Man shouldn't be there. Ant-Man's in the 2000s.
Right.
Correct?
And so I guess they're saying, yeah, and even then it's like, oh, well, like everyone in his vicinity gets sent back. But then, yeah, Ant-Man wasn't there and Happy Hogan wasn't there. So why are they specifically brought in? And why is it a Happy that
has the purple Hulk stuff? Fine if you just want to tell isolated stories. Then don't even mess with this stuff. That's what we're saying. Right? Like, no, just tell a story that's an individual what if that has nothing to do with that. The MCU.
I think and this is maybe just my final thought in general, because I should say, like, I enjoyed the last two episodes. I enjoyed the finale a lot, even though I recognize, like, I agree with all of your critiques. I was pretty bought in because I liked that Strange episode so much from the first season that I did want to see what would happen with that character. I thought that was a satisfying end for him, despite the weirdness of the Forge stuff. But
sure.
I think I continue and I will continue to say this, just like I did after Loki, just like I did after the Marvels. Like, at some point, they are going to need to definitively lay out how their theory of the multiverse and incursions works, because it's starting to just get messy. There is a reason that when this whole thing kind of started in Marvel Comics, the second issue that Hickman writes is basically just like a massive exposition dump of like, this is how this plays out. Because then over the next 3 years of comics, you can always like go Inception. Back to like
Inception. Yes, they literally take 10 minutes and be like, about. Here are the rules. This is how it has to work. Ariadne in that movie is literally asking Dom the questions of how does this work? And they're going through it. Yeah, we need a little bit of that. It's almost as if I wish someone could have told me that the multiverse could get messy. Oh, wait, I did on this podcast 2 years ago
when they announced it. It's true. And I just think that 2 years ago, I thought, and I actually am, I'm not like, again, we'll see. I think that we've got a lot of opportunities coming up even this year to start like zeroing in. But I think that this, for them to embark on the multiverse saga in the same era where they've clearly had some issues with just like an overflow of content, a lack of not quality control, but a lack of the level of quality control that the MCU was used to. Like, I think it's hard because I think I assumed that they would plan all of this out like very finely in the way that it seems like they had, at least for the back half of the Infinity Saga. And I get the sense sometimes that like, okay, here's a Waldron project. He's going to like sprinkle what he needs to make that project work. And then like, now here's the Marvels and we're going to get like what we need to make that work. And then here's What If, and like, it's kind of doing its own thing that's sort of connected, but not totally. And then all of that with Endgame kind of in the background, and you're just sort of left with this, like, I'm not sure all of this has been cohesively like structured. Maybe it has been, and I just don't see it yet. And maybe it's going to be a thing that's done retroactively. But
I don't think it has been. But I really enjoyed What If season 2. I'm really looking forward to the stuff we have coming up this week. Echo this week. Tons of content coming all of your ways. And thanks for listening. We love you all. We'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.